You're watching Secretary Pete Hegseth addressing a meeting of hundreds of top-ranking generals and admirals. Hegseth told the officers, welcome to the War Department, because the era of the Department of Defense is over. He says the department lost its warrior ethos and became the woke department, saying the military promoted too many uniformed leaders for the wrong reasons based on race or gender quotas. Now he says the military must address the problems in its own command, and the Pentagon is ripping out the debris of DEI initiatives in woke garbage. Hegseth criticized troops he called fat, saying service members will be held to the highest male standard, but says this isn't about keeping women out of the service. He says they'll also have to adhere to new grooming standards. Hegseth also stressed peace through strength, saying those who long for peace must prepare for war. Now Hegseth says this is the most urgent moment that requires more troops, more munitions, more missiles, submarines, bombers, and innovation. He says he's implementing 10 directives to reform the military.
All right, so that was ABC. And at the time we're recording, we couldn't even capture all of Pete's speech because he just spoke this morning. So they gave a good, pretty good rundown, I think, on what he spoke about. This is just a barn burner, could I just say. Today, as I'm recording, is September the 30th of 2025. This is a day that will go down in history because Pete Hegseth called all the military brass from all over the world and their chief staff officers to come to Quantico, Virginia, to meet with him. And so the left is apoplectic, maybe because Pete, on his he was coming back, I think, from Japan on Sunday, gave a little hint as to what might be happening. Let's listen. This is clip four.
It's Sunday, but of course we're still working. I want to show you one thing. It's a new memorandum that's coming out today on combat arms standards. You see, for far too long, we allowed standards to slip and different standards for men and women and combat arms MOSs and jobs. That's not acceptable. We need to have the same standard, male or female, in our combat roles to ensure our men and women who are under our leaders or in those formations have the best possible leaders and the highest possible standards that are not based at all on your sex, if you're a man or a woman. So we're signing this, I'm signing this memorandum today. The services will review, and soon we will have nothing but the highest and equal standards for men and women in combat.
Wow, what a thought. Well, leading up to his statement on Sunday, the Washington Post, I did a little clip to prepare us all for this horrible, no good meeting, because a lot of the military brass were groaning, complaining, all kinds of complaints you would not believe. But the Washington Post made it very official, the opposition to Pete's meeting. And let's listen to that too, clip five.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has ordered hundreds of the nation's top generals and admirals to Quantico, Virginia next Tuesday. Today we learned that the reason for all of this scramble to get everyone in place is to hear Hegseth speak about military standards and warrior ethos for a speech that's expected to last less than an hour. Several people we spoke to were not only frustrated, but almost insulted by the idea that Hegseth would lecture a room full of generals and admirals on warrior ethos when that's what they've been doing their whole lives. The last 2 days, both military and civilian personnel have reached out to us with their concerns. First of all, the officers that are being sent to Quantico have major security concerns in their own theaters and their own commands that they need to pay attention to. Second, the cost of flying military and commercial air from all of these points just to show up quickly in order to be in Quantico on time. This meeting's happening on September 30th, which is the end of the fiscal year. And because there's no budget, there's a possibility the government will shut down, potentially stranding a lot of that staff in Virginia when they're needed back at their commands. We spoke to people of all ranks, their support staff, civilian personnel, and there's frustration across the board about how this could potentially be a waste of resources and a waste of time. But there's also a sense that maybe this isn't the only reason Hegseth is bringing the generals in. And over the next few days, we'll be watching closely for any announcements on general officer firings or consolidations.
Okay, so you see how this is going, don't you? Let's see. It's going to cost a lot of money at a time when we're, you know, we need money. The Pentagon has never been worried about spending money, I don't think. That's been one of our greatest expenditures and really so much waste since I can remember on the Pentagon's part, even when we were not in war. So it's become, you know, the military-industrial complex. But the Washington Post says that these generals, they're just worried about spending money. It's a waste of time, and they know their job. They are warriors. They don't need to hear about the warrior ethos from this Pete Hegseth person who they detest. So how did it play out this morning? Well, we're going to talk about it with someone who knows, and we'll do that right after this. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7, and I have a lot of strong opinions, and I'm going to share them today. You can call us at 662-821-2040, because you might have an opinion or two on this also. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. You can reach us on social media, any of the social media platforms, and, of course, the podcast can be found on any podcast platform. AFR.net, AmericanFamilyRadio.net is our home base. And for those of you who have been longtime listeners of my morning show on American Family Radio, that's probably where you listen. If you're not used to podcasting, you can certainly go to SandyRios.com. That's real simple, too. You just click on a link and you can listen every single day. So, well, one of the things we are going to touch on today is because of the radical feminist influence in the American military, abortion has become a very big story, even in military bases. They've tried to provide abortions for women in military. There have been a lot of pregnancies on these ships since women have been assigned to serve with men for long periods of time on naval ships. It's been a problem. And so it has been very disruptive, these very woke policies that have been implemented in the military. And it's hard for women, too. And so abortion is hard, and you can imagine how hard it would be for a young woman who's in the military by herself on a ship. It's the way she's supporting her family or herself. It's her future. I don't know. It's just a more complicated issue on this, the issue of abortion. I'll give you an example. Victoria was scared, confused, and desperate when she walked into Planned Parenthood. She was handed the abortion pill, but almost immediately she knew she had made a tragic mistake. The weight of regret was so crushing, she even thought about ending her own life. By God's grace, she reached out for help, and that search led her to preborn network clinics, where truth broke through. Their loving staff gave her immediate care and helped her save not just her baby's life, but her own. While preborn is trying to prevent women from being in this position, I don't think they're present on naval ships or in the military. Isn't it something? What would have been different if we could have educated women in the military differently to all the women who've gone through this? This past many, many years since Obama really was in power. So if you'd like to help preborn, help the women that they can, and that's the women who are stateside here, by making it possible for them to see their baby in utero before it's born, you know, it's a real person. They might see a nose that looks like theirs, eyes, movement. It's just a wonderful, miraculous thing to see that. Well, if you'd like to help, it's just $28 to provide one ultrasound. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, we have a really great show today. We're going to be talking to Elaine Donnelly, founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness. Elaine has been on the starting line covering the wokeness in the military for as long as I've been in radio. And so we're going to have quite the discussion on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Foolish and reckless political leaders set the wrong compass heading, and we lost our way. We became the woke department, but not anymore. No more identity months, DEI offices, dudes in dresses. No more climate change worship. No more division, distraction, or gender delusions.
All right, that's the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth. As we mentioned, he's speaking still, maybe even, as we record this morning to military brass who've flown in from all over the world. complaining all the way. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But Pete is actually giving it to them straight, as he has been since President Trump nominated him to be Secretary of Defense, now Secretary of War. Well, that was a double-barreled shotgun, but it was only one of them. But immediately I thought of someone that I've gotten to know since I often refer to this. I just can't help it. It was one of my beginnings in radio. That's Chicago. And Elaine Donnelly and I used to talk often. I've learned so much from her through the years. Phyllis Schlafly, before Elaine, and now Elaine. Elaine founded the Center for Military Readiness. She's the founder and president. And Elaine has tracked through these decades all of the move toward wokeness in the military. She has rung the bell, shouted from the housetops. And so I couldn't think of anyone that I wanted to talk to more about what this all means than Elaine Donnelly, who joins us this morning. Good morning, Elaine. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Good day to talk.
It is a good day to talk. All right. So, Elaine, you know, because we're right at the very front end of Pete just talking this morning, just tell me what, I don't know if you got to hear it all, but that
yes,
particular,
all of it.
Okay, so tell me what thing stood out to you that made your heart beat fast.
This was a shift in paradigm. This is not just a policy change that, you know, is there one week and is gone the next. This was a fundamental shift in the paradigm, the culture of the military. And in this context, culture means how things are done and what are the values behind what is done. Now, I've seen the sweep of social change since, 41 years. I was a young mom. Didn't have military experience. I became a member of the Dakowitz Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services and visited military bases all over and watched the men and women in the military. Women, so impressive. But what Dakowitz was pretty good back then. I wrote recommendations and everything. But then they started to shift, and they went to a different direction, which was reversed today by Pete Hegseth. Dakowitz eventually got more radical. And the paradigm became diversity is a strategic imperative. Something came out, a major report that said the same thing, changed all the policies in the military to advance careers and DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Then in the Obama years, started going towards CRT, critical race theory. All of these things were social agendas, just like Pete Hegseth said today. And I watched the whole thing. We founded CMR in 1992 when it started to take shape of social change with gays in the military. Now it's up to transgenders in the military. So all of these things have been building for more than 30 years. And here comes the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, saying, enough of that. We're not going to have... what did he say, dudes in dresses and things like that? We're not going to have different standards for the combat arms?
You know what? Actually, I'm going to drop in another clip because it'll kind of enforce what you're saying. I think this one, this is clip four, and I'm sure this really caused a little discomfort in that audience of generals and flag officers and all the muckety-mucks from the Pentagon gathering at Quantico, Virginia today. This is clip four. Let's listen.
If the Secretary of War can do regular hard PT, so can every member of our joint force. Frankly, it's tiring to look out at combat formations, or really any formation, and see fat troops. Likewise, it's completely unacceptable to see fat generals and admirals in the halls of the Pentagon and leading commands around the country and the world. It's a bad look. It is bad, and it's not who we are. So whether you're an airborne ranger or a chairborne ranger, a brand new private or a four-star general, you need to meet the height and weight standards and pass your PT test. And as the chairman said, yes, there is no PT test. But today, at my direction, every member of the joint force at every rank is required to take a PT test twice a year, as well as meet height and weight requirements twice a year, every year of service. Also today, at my direction, every warrior across our joint force is required to do PT every duty day. Should be common sense. I mean, most units do that already.
Elaine, I don't know. I don't recall us ever talking about the problem with weight in the military because we had, it seemed at the time, more important things. But comment on that. How do you think that's going to be received, and how big of a problem do you see that as currently?
I think this is going to be hard because some people see high standards as barriers to women's careers. We saw this very recently when Senator Mazie Hirono was talking to the FBI director, Kash Patel. And she said, well, these standards, this is FBI she's talking about, they're too high for women. They have to run and they have to jump and they have to carry while they're running and all. She said, isn't that really unfair? And, of course, yeah, it may be unfair for the women. They don't have the same strength as the men. But here's the difference. She would lower the standard and make it possible for women to pass rather than keeping the standard high and finding the people who can actually do the job. There's the difference. And today, Pete Hegseth said, we're going to have standards that fit the requirements of the job. It's not going to be about how many women we have or how many race representation people we have. That's not going to be it. As for the older generals, you can have some age norming to and compensated for by experience. If you have more experience, you don't have to be the same as an 18-year-old in boot camp, okay? That's common sense. But you do have to be physically fit, everybody, every age, in whatever occupation you're in. But he also did a really good job in differentiating between being in the military and being in the combat arms. Now, we've talked about this many times before. Combat arms units are the ones that attack the enemy. It's that simple. Infantry, special operations forces, any occupation where physical strength is a factor, and that includes the FBI. Okay? In those units, you must have one high equal standard. That's what he said today. And I was thrilled to hear it because so many times people say, well, we have to have standards that are fair. General Martin Dempsey, we even gave it a name, the Dempsey effect. Yes. Dempsey's standard would be, this was back in 2013, he announced women were going to be in combat, all the combat arms. And a reporter asked, well, what about if women can't meet the same standard? Well, then we'll reassess the standard and find out if it needs to be that high. Now, I'm paraphrasing what General Dempsey said. This is the Dempsey rule. The Dempsey rule just got thrown out the window by the Secretary of War, in his case, Pete Hegseth. And that's what I mean by a paradigm change. It will change the way things are done. Now, I've been following for years the Army Combat Fitness Test.
Yes, I know you have. So explain why this, what they've actually done to our standards, Elaine. Lay that out, how detrimental it's been to lower those standards and to include women.
Well, first, go ahead. They knew when General Dempsey issued his Dempsey rule, that's what we call it, they started progression toward having women in the infantry. The Marine Corps did a full study of everything that would mean. They had field tests where they compared the units with men and women and those with men only. The results were stunning, just stunning, and there was no way you could make a case that gender integration improved the strength and speed and stamina and cohesion of these combat units. It was disproven. Okay, they started out to prove one thing, and they proved another. Well, right after that, the Army said, well, we're going to go ahead anyway because the Secretary of Defense at the time said, well, that's what we're going to do. This was the Obama administration. And they said, well, we'll have a gender-neutral set of standards for the combat arms. Well, guess what? It didn't work. The women's success rate, the failure rate, 56%. Okay, they made a few adjustments, and that reduced the failure rate a little bit. But they still, when they tried to put women through the same strength regimen as the men, strength, stamina, marching for long periods, all those kinds of things that are important in war. You got to have speed as well as stamina and strength. They just couldn't do the job. So what did they do? They changed the standard to make it possible for the women to succeed. And there's the problem. If you adjust standards in favor of a certain group's careers, that is not what Pete Hegseth just talked about today. Yeah, He's talking about warriors, okay? And you can be a warrior even if you're working in the Pentagon, but you have to meet the high standard or be prepared to do so.
You know, I know there are a lot of stories, but I want to read one here that I read in an article. And it basically says, remember the first woman to graduate from Ranger School? She spent nearly eight months in training for what's supposed to be a 61-day course, getting special treatment, multiple chances that the male candidates never received. The Army did not need a woman ranger. The feminists needed a political victory to claim in their war against so-called toxic masculinity, which is that's a whole other rabbit trail. But just one example, I'm sure there are lots of others, Elaine, about how this affected the men.
Right. Well, what happened, this is all described in a book called Stand Down. It's by a lawyer named James Hasson, a former Green Beret trained. He had been through that particular course. And he went there, I think it was Fort Benning, and interviewed some of the trainers there. And they said, oh, yeah, when she messed up, didn't do the job right, wasn't able to finish, whatever, she was graduated anyway. Now, I'm not using any names here. All of that is in the book, and I don't have firsthand knowledge. But it's a very convincing book that compromises have been made on the way to putting women into these combat units. As far as I know, the only outfit that has not included women, even though they like people to believe they do, is the Navy SEALs. That whole regimen of training at Navy SEALs, I saw it some years ago when I was a member of a presidential commission on this subject. So, I mean, the things these men do is just amazing. And no woman has made it through that course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know,
so the Marine Infantry course, finally, after 30 tries, finally a woman or two did pass the infantry officer course. But they did change the standards somewhat. Some things became optional instead of mandatory. So you see, there's more than one way to adjust standards. And that's what we've been watching all these years.
Exactly. You know, Phyllis used to say, I know you you remember this well, Elaine, better than I do. I probably learned it from you the first time. But that physiologically, women have 30% less upper body strength. So if you're trying to carry all that equipment in battle, trying to carry a wounded soldier out of a pit if he's been shot, a woman can't do that. A woman can't do that.
There's a few. But you can't make policy based on the few. It's just ordinary people who fight our wars. Okay, we don't have the kinds of people who do advanced training all the time, or wrestlers or people like that. It's just ordinary people. So when the Marines did the test, the infantry test with mixed units and all male units, the women were the best they could find, volunteers to do the test. The men were just average. And yet, they beat them out. I forget what the percentage was, at least almost 60%, I think. And except for one thing, one of the events, and the reason that the mixed units did better was because the men actually helped the women do the heavy lifting in one of the test events. So we know this. It's been documented. It's common knowledge. There are physical differences. But the Pentagon has been required all these years, just like Pete Hegseth said today, they had to do things against their better judgment, many generals and admirals. Now, many of them soldiered on anyway. A few, very, very few, left their military careers in protest. Some got very gung-ho about the whole thing. And Pete talked to them today, too. They said, if you have a knot in your stomach, you don't like what I've said, you might want to consider a different career, you know, because you're wedded to this philosophy. But the Marine Corps made their recommendations to the Secretary of Defense at the time. What was his name?
Carter Page.
Yeah.
Or
no,
Ash Carter. Ash
Carter. And he just said, well, we'll make it all uniform. Sorry, Marines. We're all going to have women in the combat arms. So the Marines, just like all the other branches of service, had to follow orders. And they did. And they held out for a while with co-ed basic training, but then that came along, even though they resisted. They had all-male training, and they had women's units as well. Tough training for both, but not identical. And they were forced to give that up as well. So this whole thing, see, I've had firsthand knowledge. I have seen generals and admirals firsthand. at a former Dakowitz meeting. Dakowitz has now been disbanded. We'll get to that in a minute. And I would ask a question. And they would come to me afterwards and give me the answer. I'd say, well, why didn't you tell me that at the meeting? Because, well, they said, because the military press was there and it could ruin my career to tell you the truth in answer to your question.
Oh, boy.
I mean, here I was, a young mom, civilian, at these meetings, seeing the brass quake in fear. We call it fem-fear.
Fem-fear.
Yep. Fem-fear. They would not cross the organized Dakowitz on anything because the Dakowitz was run by ambitious female officers. And many of them aspired to be chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, just like Colin Powell, because they saw everything through the lens of DEI and advancing careers and being the first. Okay, so now this administration has started, not only started turning it around, they're actually doing what they are saying. It's not just words. Now, we saw this a few weeks ago. Actually, last week, the final story came out. All the advisory committees in the Pentagon, and there's quite a few, they were all reviewed to find out if they were doing anything useful, okay? They had to say, what am I doing and why is it useful? Well, one of them was the Dakowitz Committee devoted to advance women in the military, okay? I don't know what they said, but something changed. At first, they were going to be dropped, this large group to be dropped. Then somebody unknown put them back on the retention list. But then Pete Hegseth, with his own signature on a memo last Friday, overturned that. And I thought, oh, what is this? And I've never seen anything like that. Now, having seen the speech, I can see why, because he sees right through this. He knows the Dakowitz, all they do is push diversity, women's careers, even if it hurts, the Dempsey rule, if the standard's too high, adjust the standard. They never look back to see if their recommendations have been helpful. And then you get into the more advanced progression of wokeism. What do you consider to be a woman? If you're a committee on women in the services, does that include so-called trans women who call themselves women even though they're men? I mean, somebody in the Pentagon, I have good reason to believe, asked these questions. And then all of a sudden they realized, uh-oh, this is not consistent with what the secretary is going to say. But I give Pete Hegseth all the credit. I don't know who the people are involved, but somebody figured it out that if you're going to say high standards are the primary thing, the only thing, then you've got to get rid of it all. You've got to get rid of all the examples that I mentioned before, the dames in dresses or the dudes in dresses, all of the pride days and weeks and months and all of those kinds of things that are social in nature.
You know,
and
Elaine, I was just going to say, I remember a news story probably in the probably during the Obama years when they were having they used to have drag queen hours even at these military bases.
Oh, all the time.
And I remember they had men in high heels, like a thing at the Pentagon, with men in high heels. This is how bad it was. And then I have one other personal experience, not just because of a friend. I had a friend that was a career military. He went back in to fly Apache helicopters and did training later in his life. And he said during the fitness test, they would give them stress cards to hold up if it was too hard, if the training was just too hard.
They also, and you could see it, you had a wall that you had to climb over. There were two walls right next to each other. One was higher for the men and the other was lower for the women. Okay? Now, you can have those kinds of different standards if the people in that unit are being trained for positions that are not the direct ground combat. Okay? Say a female X-ray technician shouldn't have to do the same as an infantry soldier. This is officer school. And if they didn't have some differences in training, they would lose a lot of really good women in the military. And there's many. We need women in the military. But when you start getting into the combat arms, what the Army found after 2015, in the combat arms, you had that huge failure rate for the women. They could not disguise it. So they went through three different reiterations, and they still couldn't do it. Now, it'll be very interesting to see what happens under Pete Hegseth. And to me, it would be very simple. You just say, here's the male standard. You meet the male standard, you might be in, okay? But we're not going to make any adjustments. If you don't, then you do something else. Everybody can serve in any service or even as a civilian. I mean, anybody can serve our country. But you free the trainers and the decision makers and people who deal with personnel of the burden of having to accept people that they know are not as qualified to do the physical job, the physically demanding job.
Now, Elaine, one point you used to make that is very important that we haven't even touched on. You used to tell me that these women officers, very ambitious, who were pushing for women in combat zones, that the rank and file female soldiers didn't want to do that. Now, and that it was not good for them. So explain that.
Well, that might have been after my trip to Paris Island many years ago. I was there as a member of the presidential commission, and we were there to ask a lot of questions of everybody, all ranks and service branches, everything. So I had lunch with some of the women there at Paris Island, and I asked them, would you want to be training with the men who are over there? They had their own training unit, and they said, no way. We don't want to have to compete with men. We want to serve our country. I want to be the toughest Marine I can be. That doesn't mean that I can best that man right over there, just an average guy. I can't do that because I'm made the way I am. And women's bodies, of course, have something that men don't have, and that's the ability to have children. So the muscle mass in women centers in the midsection. And some physicians, especially women physicians, have said the reason there's a difference, women have more strength in their midsection than the men, is because of the potential for childbirth. But you know, when you're in a combat arms unit, you need upper body strength to carry that pack on your back and to march for miles. If you are a woman, chances are you've got a big, heavy pack. You've got to lean forward to compensate, and that hurts your hips. The injury rates among women start at double and go up from there, depending on what they're told to do. And they are so brave, and they will try their darndest to do what the men are doing, and they end up injuring themselves in much greater numbers. This has been documented for years. Nobody ever questions the courage of the women in the military or their commitment. They're really terrific people. But they shouldn't be asked to do things beyond their physical capabilities and ordered. When other people's lives, in addition to their own lives, everybody's lives are at greater risk.
You know, Elaine, one thing that used to really disturb me so much, it's the when they used to take women away, you know, out of their families, new moms, little children, and send them over and into combat. And a lot of families had no parents at all. I mean, that was pretty during the Iraq War. That was very common. And do you think that's how will this change? How will Pete's new positions change that, or will it?
Well, at that time, the daycare capabilities of the military were pretty scant. It was a shock to the culture of the United States. Even some very liberal feminist types did wince when they saw female soldiers with their helmets kissing their baby goodbye. There was a particularly famous picture that kind of captured that image. Well, as a nation, there have been some cultural changes already. We have become accustomed to seeing this sort of separation. And there are some improvements as far as provisions and care and stuff, but it still is troubling. When I see men ordering women into the front line to attack the enemy, our commission, presidential commission, we had a statement that was written actually by Cato Byrne, the late Cato Byrne. She said one simple thing, good men protect and defend women. And it was adopted by the commission. But a lot of the feminist types, they hated it because, as they thought, it interfered with women's careers. So that has changed, and the tolerance for violence against women has changed. Because when you say to a woman, you're going to be in the infantry and we're going to train you to go out and kill the enemy, you know, enemy men who are, you know, at least twice as big as you are, what we're saying is violence against women is okay. as long as it happens at the hands of the enemy. You see what a serious cultural change that is?
My goodness, yes. And I think about, you know, all the women that were put in harm's way, and I'm sure there are a lot of stories I never heard, when they were in the Middle East, knowing how Middle Eastern, I should say Sharia adherent Muslims feel about women and the wicked things they do to them. They were just putting them in harm's way, Elaine. It was just so upsetting. Yeah. I'm just grateful. And but we're not done yet. I want to explain Dacowitz. Dacowitz is the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Service, and that's the thing you joined in when you were a young woman. It started 74 years ago.
1984 to 86.
Okay, so when you
and
were...
It was during the Reagan administration, and we had a lot of issues to deal with. At that time, there were some things that needed to be recommended and carried out. But now Dacowitz says, 92% of their recommendations have been carried out. So why do we need the Dacowitz? You know, it's just their mission is obsolete. And in some cases, their mission, their recommendations of the past, they never evaluate to find out, was that a good idea or was it not? Look at the sexual assault numbers. They kept saying, well, if women were in the combat arms, there would be more respect for them and less sexual assault. The opposite proved true, and it was General Dempsey again. He was one of those who said it. Well, we'll have less sexual harassment if we put women in the infantry. No, General, you were wrong, because the numbers kept going up and up, and they're still going up. So Dacowitz, they always blame the men. You know, women don't do anything wrong in their playbook. It's just one of many reasons. I followed them ever since the time I was on, and their mission really is obsolete. Now they're going to scream and cry and try to portray Pete Hegseth and the president as anti-women in the military. I don't see any sign of that. What they're saying is they want the strongest, best military in the world with no compromises for political agendas.
Elaine, how do you see this actually working out for the feminist women in the military, which have just grown, and as you said, they've just become dominant. And a lot of them are lesbians. Mm-hmm. They have just a very strong will. I will say that that's pretty typical of most lesbians. They will have their way. Now, I know there are exceptions, so forgive me for making a generalization, but I know that that's true. So, what do you think is going to happen? What are they going to do? They're going to leave? Are they going to keep fighting? What?
Well, I'm not going to really comment on the personal sexuality of women in the military. We know there are some men. There's never really been any solid surveys, but it's a small percentage, okay? The policies put in place by Hegseth and the president, they say that you're not eligible to be in the military if you suffer from gender dysphoria, and that is confusion about sexuality. So, in essence, they have brought back the Trump policy of his first administration. And that policy, which was based on the needs of the military, not an agenda, that policy was winding its way through the courts, and it had a very good chance of being upheld by the Supreme Court. Okay? In fact, the Supreme Court earlier this year gave a green light for Trump's policy to be implemented. Okay, now, during the time that litigation is moving forward, that's where we're at right now. And I hope that the Supreme Court will uphold the policy because it's based on military need and necessity, best interests of the military, not individual desires or careers or anything like that. So these problems are inherent. People are human. You make big mistakes in policy when you pretend that people are perfect. They're not. So that's, again, Pete Hegseth is saying, we know people aren't perfect, but we want the very best that we can. We know that dangers exist. We want to minimize danger, not increase the hardships of being in the armed forces. And there are hardships. It's hard for women. It's more hard for women in many ways than it is for men. We don't want to make that job any more difficult or dangerous. And that's what the secretary has said. And bringing all the generals together, at first I wondered, I wonder what's behind that. But I think he realized that this was such a change, it had to be conveyed in a way that would be remembered, that would be consistent for everyone at the same time and place. And I think that was a very smart strategy.
Well, you know the left doesn't think that's a smart strategy. They've been complaining about this for the last several days. And so there's going to be a lot of opposition, but God bless Pete Hegseth. And one last thing, Elaine, this I learned from Jerry Boykin, General Jerry Boykin. I'm sure he's a good friend of yours, too. Warrior ethos. Explain that before we say goodbye. What is the warrior ethos? What does that mean?
It means a dedication to the mission, even at the expense and the risk, higher risk, to one's own life. It means sacrifice is the best way I think I could say it. Sacrifice of self for the whole, for the mission, for the United States, patriotism. And it's something that, again, you can be a warrior even if you're not out there in the field. One of my mentors was on my board when I founded CMR, General Richard Treffery. He's a lieutenant general, and he used to be the teacher of other generals. They had a school that they called it the Charm School for generals. Actually, it was a tough school. And what he taught was, you don't have to be out there on the battlefield. What matters is your dedication to the mission on a day-to-day basis. So when you're asked to say, in the current day, Obama's administration and Biden, we're going to have men who like to dress like women and want to use the women's private spaces and get on their athletic teams, that's going to be what you're going to do. And now, at that point, somebody should have said, no, that makes no sense, and they should have put their stars on the table and said, this is not right, and why it's not right. But you have to be a warrior to do that sometimes. You have to stand up for what's right in whatever form you are, whether it's out in the field or, you know, in some other basis. Everything is dedicated toward one thing, the defense of this nation. And that's why we are so proud and appreciative of people in the military who put their lives on the line, everybody. And there has to be cohesion and trust up and down the chain of command. That's vertical cohesion, and then horizontal cohesion among people in a given unit. You can't have someone in that unit who everybody knows can't do the job and expect to not have morale problems, you see. So the commanders have a role to play. Those who are under their orders have a role to carry out the orders, and that's how you get the strongest military in the world. And my mentor, General Treffery, taught this to so many generals. They went through it was actually called the Army Force Management School. And they gave him a special reward when he retired from the military, very special reward. And I was there, a big reception, everyone was there. He was quite a guy. And lived a good, long life, and I learned a lot from him. So for me, it isn't how many brass medals you have, it's what it is that you do, the integrity, the measure of integrity and defense of truth that you have.
Yeah. Well, with all the dangers in the world, this is exactly what we need. And with the recruitments just being sky high right now, Elaine, it is like a shot in the arm, an encouragement. And I think, as you have explained, an encouragement to women in the military as well. That sanity will be restored.
They don't want to be wasted either, with a double meaning. Wasted meaning used unnecessarily, or wasted as in wiped out. They want to be able to serve their country without pretending to be men. And there's lots of ways they do that all the time. Those positions have expanded, and for the better. My views are not exactly the same as they were way back when. But there are certain basic principles. You should be ready for the job. And regardless of how many people criticize, well, that doesn't advance the quota enough, you have to do the right thing for the right reasons. So Hegseth got all those generals and admirals together today, and I've never seen anything quite like that. I think it will pay off for a long time.
I do, too. I do, too, and we pray that it will, Elaine. And for today, we're going to celebrate.
They need to change the curriculum at the service academies and the colleges. I've spoken at many of them. And what they get there is a heavy load of wokeism instead of solid doctrine of readiness that has to change.
Well, and also just like the whole chaplain issue of, you know, when Obama brought in so many Muslim chaplains, and they started punishing Christian chaplains who could no longer pray in the name of Jesus and couldn't oppose transgenderism or gay marriage. So they've done a lot of damage that has to be the bell has to be rerung on lots of important issues, Elaine. So we'll just be looking to see. I'm sure Pete has thought of all of that. It's pretty amazing to watch him, isn't it?
And when he said about the drag queens, we were the first to report, I think. Maybe Times reported the story about the young man doing a gay striptease on the carrier, Ronald Reagan. And the Navy Times ran the story, big picture, no criticism. We were the first ones to blow the whistle on this sort of thing, even though, you know, it was right there in plain sight. Took it to the highest level of the Pentagon, but you know what? They didn't do anything about it. And I don't know the story of why. I know there were people who tried. This was long before the man became famous. We saw those videos of Harpy Daniels. Remember that? The cross-dressing sailor?
Yes,
made quite a sensation 2 years ago. But we had already reported on that very same story 4 years before. Nothing was done about it because the policymakers in the Pentagon, they were afraid to go against the LGBTQ or whatever lobby you want to call it, because they had to celebrate Pride Month. Oh, am I going to take the transgender, self-identified gay sailor off the carrier Ronald Reagan? Well, they were afraid to do that. It might hurt their career. And in a way, I can understand that. I never blame them for that. You know, I didn't have a career at risk when I was on Dakowitz. I just asked a whole bunch of questions. I'm still asking questions. Why are you retaining a committee whose agenda, Dakowitz, is 100% opposite of your own? I asked that question and several others. And then a couple days later, goodbye, Dakowitz. It's time. 77 years is long enough.
Yeah, I think so. And you've done it. You know, again, Elaine, it has to be very satisfying, as it should be. For all the work that you've done through the years. And let me just say, Center for Military Readiness, Elaine does great writing. She does great reporting, and she's all over this, as you can hear. And you can find her writing, and I'm sure we'll be seeing you write something about this Pete Hegseth speech this morning, but it's cmrlink.org, Center for Military Readiness, link.org, cmrlink.org, for any future follow-ups if you want to know really what's actually happening. Elaine cuts right through, has great sources, and we'll find out if this is going to stick and what the opposition is. So, Elaine, God bless you for all of your work, and it's been a pleasure to be your friend, and I hope that continues. Let's continue to be
friends. Thank you, Sandy. I appreciate kind words, and a lot of people have been in the trenches in the armies working towards sound policy, and you're one of them, and with your voice and reach and influence, and this is just a good thing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Elaine. All right. God bless you, Elaine. Again, it's cmrlink.org. And I hope we talk again, and I hope it's still good news. Elaine, thanks so much. Yes. Elaine Donnelly. God bless you.
Okay.
Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
And the FDA finally approved the French abortion pill. And again, there's two pills. They okayed the first one, mifepristone, for chemical abortions up to 7 weeks. Later, that was extended to 10 weeks under Barack Obama. And then under Joe Biden, they opened the door to the FDA approving of mifepristone prescriptions online, through the mail, and without any kind of supervision. And the Supreme Court upheld that unanimous ruling just in 2024. It really is despicable. I'm telling you, it is despicable, given the number of injuries. 10% or so of women who have these chemical abortions, not to mention the loss of life, the trauma of delivering at home. It is a disgraceful thing that our country has done. But Preborn is trying to provide a redemptive way to stop it. They have a pill that can actually reverse that first pill. And the first one is mifepristone. So if a mother has second thoughts when she takes that first pill, if she gets to a Preborn clinic, they can stop that. But if she takes the second pill, which expels the baby, it's too late. And that's why I'm just, we're trying to educate women, not educate. I hate that, just really too sterile. We're trying to move their hearts by showing them their baby in utero through ultrasound. That's what preborn does. That's the emotional trigger, which is genuine and real from the heart of God. That's a baby. And when women see that, they don't take these abortion pills. It stops it before it begins. But both things have to be addressed, and that's what preborn does. If you would like to help, it's $28 for one ultrasound. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And please make your most generous donation.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
You love your country, and we love this uniform, which is why we must do better.
Okay, so there's Pete. Another part of his speech this morning. I'm sure you'll all be eagerly looking. I haven't even had a chance to hear it, and I'm anxious to hear the whole thing and get the context. God bless Pete Hegseth. You know, he had so much opposition in the Senate when he, because of his past, he's made a lot of mistakes. And, you know, isn't God good? You know, he uses men powerfully who've made mistakes. One thinks of King David. There's a long list, and there most of them are in the scripture. I think there's a disciple called Peter. There's a persecutor of Christians named Paul. You know, God uses men who are flawed and takes their lives and changes them. And I see that in Pete. And so isn't it amazing? Fearless. This is what he's doing. He's fearlessly tackling the job he has been given, and that is Secretary of War. But of course, there are opponents, and one of the oldest opponents, the feminism move started for the most part in this country in the 1960s, and one of the personalities who has advanced it into the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even now is the famous Hillary Clinton, who was the feminist of all feminists, who has done countless damage to this country by her ability to lie and craft lies, to cause trouble, to confuse people, because she is brilliant about confusing people with her lies. She really is. And I'll give you an example. This is what Hillary said over the weekend. This is clip 2.
The idea that you could turn the clock back and try to recreate a world that never was dominated by, you know, let's say it, white men of a certain persuasion, a certain religion, a certain point of view, a certain ideology. It's just doing such damage to what we should be aiming for. And we were on the path toward that. I mean, imperfectly, lots of, you know, bumps along the way. But I agree with you. We were on the right trajectory.
Well, of course she would think that, because all things gender are very important to Hillary. I know that she played loosely herself in her personal life with gender, and we won't even go into that. But she has been a champion of lesbianism and all kinds of perverse sexual acts, starting back when, the UN's meeting on women in Beijing a number of years ago. That was in the 90s. It's the first thing I covered when I really got to know Hillary Clinton and what she was really all about. So, yeah, this is not exactly her way. And she said, we've made some mistakes, but this is the way we should be going, the way we just described, where men are wearing high heels. Camp Pendleton at the big Marine base in California. I will never forget seeing a snapshot, I think in the Military Times, of a guy in a cute little frilly dress with heels and hosiery going through the mess line. It was so inspiring to see a Marine dressed like that. That's where we were going. We were having women, again, get pregnant on these. There were just an exponential amount of pregnancies on these naval ships where women would go out. These guys go out, you know, for several months at a time on these long voyages, and the quarters are very close. So what did we expect? But that's fine. Hillary thinks that's great. We were on the right trajectory. And then she says that we try to recreate a world that never really existed of, you know, like manly men of a certain persuasion religiously, which, of course, she knows full well is Christian men who were the foundation and backbone of this country and have always been. And she says we can't recreate that. Well, let's just see about that, Hillary. We'll just see about that. And I have to say, we are not confined by what was in the past. things can even be better. We can be better people. We can have better leaders. We can let God be more in control of our country and our government. And it's only going to go someplace good. I think of the many passages in the Bible, in the Old Testament. I wish I were better at remembering passages. And in this point in my life, I can't remember the references. But God promised he would give us the leaders we deserved. And I thought that, you know, when Bill Clinton was elected, it really occurred to me that God was giving our country the leader it deserved, especially when they elected him the second time after his affair with Monica Lewinsky. They didn't care. The American people elected him anyway. And I thought, well, all right, God is giving us the leader we deserve. Same thing with Barack Obama. We have deserved these leaders, and we see where they have taken us. Now, we are a better people. I want to be accurate. I believe God is at work, and because of that, we're moving. We're moving in a different direction. And you can see Hillary's very uncomfortable with that, which makes me very happy because it means that she sees it too. And so today is a marker. September the 30th of 2025 is a day that we will never forget. And I wanted to make sure we spent time talking about it today on Sandy Rios 24/7. Thank you for listening. Onward and upward, here we go into a new adventure. Thank you for listening.